Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Amuse News. It is Friday, April 26th. I am here to share some news, and then I'm going to interview someone today who hosts a great podcast called Were You Raised by Wolves. Nick, he's an Emmy Award-winning television journalist based in New York. We're going to have a fun conversation about his podcast, which is all about etiquette. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. I'm really excited to chat with him. But as you know, I'm the executive director of Heritage Radio Network. I'm on an adventure through the food world, and this is all part of it. So first, I'm going to give you a little bit of news, things that I've been checking out, and then we are going to bring Nick in and have a conversation with Nick. So I'll just get started. So the first thing, because it's Friday, I wanted to share this piece from CNN. It's from a couple days ago, but I wanted to share it because it's Friday. It's called Where Do IPAs Come From? So it might be cliche, but I love IPAs. So I wanted to look at this. So there's this kind of a legend of IPAs, which is that when the British occupied India, the troops there were entitled to their ration of ale. And because no one knew how to brew beer on the subcontinent of India, the Brits shipped their pale ale to India. But because the unrefrigerated ale would get bad on the way, the solution was to add extra yeast and hops to keep the beer cultures alive for the journey. So that was part of the idea. And then the soldiers left India, of course, and they wanted to bring this ale that had been created with them, and that was where the India Pale Ale was born. But it turns out that maybe the story is slightly less adventurous. There was a brewer named George Hodgson who invented a hoppy ale that he named after himself, Hodgson's Ale. It was a type known at the time as October beer because its recipe originated with the low cost of hops in the fall. And Hodgson had an exclusive beer contract with the British East India Company, so he just started calling this India Pale Ale. And apparently, like, just to evoke people's sense of imperialist pride. So that makes IPAs slightly less interesting, and maybe, you know, maybe we should change the name. I don't know. But I still do love them. So, okay, I read an article today from Food Dive, is plant-based meat more sustainable? And I just think this is an interesting kind of topic to keep an eye on, because I feel like the whole idea of sustainability is what's kind of behind, you know, plant-based meat beyond Impossible, all these brands that have, you know, of course there's like less methane and all that from not using cows. And also, you know, there's a, I guess, ethical consideration as well. But I think it's interesting. There's a couple studies that were done by some of these companies and Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, and they kind of made a lot of claims, and there was some independent researchers who went in and looked and said they couldn't quite verify this stuff. Beyond Meat said that their burger uses 99% less water, 93% lands, and generates 90% fewer greenhouse gas emissions and requires 46% less energy than a typical beef burger. One of the researchers, Hannah Ritchie from Oxford, tried to collect data on the claims and found them difficult to substantiate. So I think people thought that they could find these answers easily and start to kind of verify some of this stuff, but it's been harder than they thought to find that. I thought that was interesting because, you know, we're trying to do what's best for the planet and for ourselves. And as usual, it's maybe slightly more muddled than we think. So keeping an eye on that story. I wanted to say thank you to all the people who donated to help us in our HRN 15th anniversary tour fundraising campaign. You helped us raise thousands of dollars to help fund our education programs, internships, and fellowships. I've said this before, but these programs help activate new possibilities for young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. We have our cohort of interns right now creating Meet in 3, our flagship podcast. And we're helping a lot of young storytellers build workforce readiness skills and hopefully expanding their workforce potential. So as part of this, as I think everyone knows, we did an auction basically, or I guess a raffle where everyone entered to win 2 tickets to a concert and dinner for 2 in various cities. So I'm going to tell you the winners of a few of those now, and next week I'll tell you the rest. For Ardmore, Pennsylvania, I want to first of all thank Ardmore Music Hall and Ripplewood, the restaurant. The winner is Andrew Pfeiffer. Congratulations, Andrew. For Asheville, North Carolina, thanks to Badiwala, Chai Penny, and AVL Fest in Asheville, as well as our friends at IMAVL for helping to make this happen. The winner for Asheville is Desiree Tucker. Congrats, Desiree. And the other one I want to share with you today, Charleston, South Carolina. I want to say thank you to FIG and to the Spoleto Festival, and thanks to our board member, Julie Schaefer, for helping to put this together. And the winner for Charleston is Patrick Hickey. Congrats. So we have 3 winners there. Next week, I'll reveal the winners for LA, Philadelphia, and New York. And we have a few more days on an auction package that we're doing in Nashville where you could win VIP experience with Maggie Rose at the Brooklyn Bowl Nashville, dinner at Blue Aster, and 2 nights at the Russell Hotel. It's an awesome package through our friends at Charity Buzz. So you can bid there, look at the link in the show notes, or go to charitybuzz.com and you can bid and help support these programs. And again, we appreciate everyone helping out and helping to raise money for what we're doing here. Okay, I think that's everything that I wanted to say before I bring Nick on here. So without further ado, hey, Nick, afternoon.
Hello, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining. It's great to talk to you. And I should say, your podcast, Were You Raised by Wolves? I found out about it when I joined HRN about 6 months ago, and we've done some cross promo, and I started listening, and I think it's a really, really fun and interesting and funny and entertaining show. So thanks for doing it.
Oh, thanks for those kind words. Oh, it's been a blast to do the show. So it's nice that people like it, I think.
what was the impetus for creating this? And like, how did you end up creating a podcast where you really just address kind of etiquette questions every episode?
Yeah, I think we started this in 2019. And I think I was looking around and it was just sort of like, oh, people are really rude. Like the level of rudeness is just... it's quite high. Like you read internet comments or you go on an airplane or, I mean, there's just, it just felt like, is this what it is now? Like, do we have to accept that this is our reality? And so I'm like, I refuse to accept this. And I've always loved etiquette. Etiquette gets a bad rap, but I think etiquette's amazing because etiquette is everything. It's anthropology, it's culture, it's history, it's food, language. So I, you know, went to my friend Leah, who's now my co-host. And I was like, could there be a way we could talk about etiquette in a way that's fun and interesting and relatable and like makes people realize that like, oh no, etiquette actually does matter and is relevant and we should all want more of it. And so we tried it and it turns out a lot of people, it resonates.
That's so cool. How do you get the input from your listeners?
I mean, I get a zillion emails, texts, DMs every day. And so wow. I have a database of I have an endless database of etiquette questions and we call them etiquette crimes, just stories of horrible things, which are also kind of hilarious. Yeah. We just make it very easy to send stuff to us. And what's great is that a lot of these questions are actually happening in real time. Like we get texts from people on the airplane, you know, because they've got Wi-Fi up there. Yeah. Or, you know, we'll get a voice message, you know, from the hallway outside of the, you know, in the DMV. you know, so it's fun to like actually get like the real-time etiquette crime in progress.
I love that, the idea of the etiquette crime. And it's interesting. I want to talk a little bit about like pop culture stuff in a minute. But one thing that I think is interesting is how you're able to give concrete and like really fast advice to people on a wide range of topics. And I'll just quickly say that in recent episodes, you've talked about brushing teeth at work, splitting Airbnbs fairly, exiting dinner parties gracefully, returning gifts, and a lot more. It like really runs the gamut. Those are just like some topics that from the last, I don't know, couple of months, but you know, dozens and dozens of these topics. I guess, how do you keep yourself up to date on etiquette? Or are you just, if you know, is it that kind of thing? Or do you actually have to, like, do you do ongoing reading and research, or do you just go with your gut?
Well, I think it's important to talk about, like, what is etiquette? So let's spend a little time sort of defining it. So for me, there's a difference between etiquette and manners. Mm. Manners are the universal principles. Those are the things that we all agree on, no matter sort of what society we're from. Like, we all want to raise good children. We all want to have happiness. We all want to be kind to our neighbor. So an example, like when we're driving, it's good manners to not hit other people in your car. That is universal from, you know, New York to Tokyo. I mean, like, we all agree this is what we want. Yep. Etiquette is the way a specific society will interpret that manner. And so the etiquette for how we achieve that is different around the world. In Australia, the etiquette is to drive on the left. The same point is made. We don't want to hit people in our cars, but as a society, the Australians have decided we will drive on the left. We have the same manners, but different etiquette in the United States. We drive on the right. Mm-hmm. So this manifests all over the place, like covering your head in a synagogue. For men, that's very respectful to God. But to wear a hat in church, that would be disrespectful. Mm-hmm. So it's the same manners, but etiquette is different. And so when we're talking about etiquette questions that we get, we always go back to what is actually the principle behind it? What is the foundational manner that is like involved? And then we figure out like, okay, well, what's the etiquette then based on that? So it's not necessary to stay up to date on anything because manners are timeless. They don't change. The idea of like, oh, let's just be mindful of other people. There's no need to like, you know, think about that. But then we get some weird etiquette question. Then it's like, oh, what would actually be the most mindful thing of other people in that situation? And that's how you can come up with the etiquette answer.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think the conversation you had recently about like exiting a dinner party early or just, you know, gracefully if it's gone on for too long, there's probably a lot of different approaches, right? And like, I would probably do something different than some of my friends, but I don't know if any of them are right or wrong, but it's almost like, you know, like you said, there's kind of like the graceful way to do something. Is that up for interpretation, do you think? Or do you think that like in most of these cases, you can come to a recommendation about what would be the most appropriate way to do something?
Well, yeah, graciousness, I think, is a hard to define term. So yeah. I don't know about that. But I mean, I think there's going to be some common response to most issues, but it also comes down to sort of what you want and what kind of relationship you want mm-hmm. with the other person. You know, etiquette is a form of communication at the end of the day. You're sending a signal to people around you by the way you act. And mm-hmm. so you can send whatever signal you want. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. if you don't like your coworker, you're not obligated to like them, you know, like etiquette doesn't require you to actually have warm feelings for them. It does require you to be polite and cordial though. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, depending on what your actual feelings are, you might arrive at slightly different answers and how you decline their invitation to dinner at their house. But you know, you're still allowed to decline in a polite way. So yeah, the actual behavior might be similar, but maybe the sentiment is different depending on your feelings.
Got it. And when you all choose topics for your episodes, because it sounds like you get so much, do you try to take things from different categories? Do you just do what's top of mind or what's most interesting to you? How do you choose among the hundreds of questions you get?
Well, we like to have a little variety in the show. And we also like to pick questions that do have some sort of universal truth in them. Mm. And something where we could say something that has sort of broader implications beyond just like this one, you know, wedding that we're talking mm-hmm. about. Like what could be said more broadly about invitations or mother-in-laws or whatever the thing is. So we like to have a bit of variety there. And because our listeners are so diverse. I mean, we have everybody, you know, all ages, all genders, all geographical locations. We try to have something for everybody. So we, you know, we try not to focus too heavily on, you know, picking up kids at school or weddings or, you know, if you bounce around, you know, it keeps people interested, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's talk about food because this is a food related show, and I know that there's a lot of food etiquette. What's the most, or I guess maybe a notable food etiquette question that you've dealt with recently. Is there anything that comes to mind when you think about food etiquette that our listeners could learn from?
Well, I mean, I don't know if they can learn from it, but it, definitely something that is controversial is asking somebody for their pickle. So if you have a burger and it comes with a pickle and you don't like pickles, somebody else sees this. I think it's an interesting question. Like, are you allowed to ask for it? And if so, at what point do you ask? You know, yeah. Is that rude to ask? You know, because some people don't like pickles. Some people love pickles so much they save it to the end as like a treat for themselves. You know, and so I think that's been a great debate. We've gotten a lot of feedback on that question. And I don't know if there is a correct answer there. Maybe it depends on what your pickle relationship is with somebody.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's like, I feel like I would wait for it to be offered, even though I would be thinking about eating the pickle, but that's just me, you know, like, I don't know that that's necessarily the right thing. It might be like, maybe it's fair game. I like that.
I mean, it is polite, I think, to wait to have it offered to you. I mean, I think that would be a more polite thing to ask for a pickle, but people who love pickles would hate to see a pickle go to waste.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, exactly. And what if you miss your chance and then the, you know, the server comes and then the plate's gone and now the pickle's gone. It's gone.
There is a pickle window. Yeah, there is a pickle window. Another question we got that we got a lot of feedback on and is with a K-cup coffee machine, who should remove the used K-cup? Should you remove it as soon as you make coffee or should it be the next person's responsibility? Wow. I thought you should leave it the way you want to find it. So I would say you remove the K-cup as soon as you're done with it. A lot of people disagree with me. We've got a lot of feedback on this. I guess the K-cup is very hot. And so we wouldn't want to remove it immediately, I guess.
Interesting. So,
but yeah, very strong feelings about K-cups, I have come to learn.
That is awesome. I think like, yeah, and it, depending on where it is, right? Like if the custom in the workplace is that when you, the first thing you do is take the old one out, then that's different, right? I think it's when there's not agreement on something like that.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. The etiquette problems happen when we do not have a consensus in society about something. You know, this is where the problems happen. Yes, if we all agreed on something, then we would have no problems.
What's a controversial food? I mean, you just named a couple, but are there more? Is there anything that really like causes a lot of controversy on the food side?
Asking somebody for the recipe. So you're at a dinner party.
Interesting.
You love this dish, this dessert. Hey, can I get the recipe? And a lot of hosts don't want to give you the recipe. Huh. And so a question is that rude? Should you give the recipe? And then if you do, are you allowed to sabotage it?
Wow.
Right?
Wow. Wow. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, this is very controversial. Yeah. Is it rude to ask? And is it rude to not give it? You know, there's a lot of people have strong feelings on both sides.
So I thought it was like, I guess I would assume that it's totally fine to ask someone for a recipe, but that is potentially offensive, huh?
Well, I mean, offensive is the wrong word, but you do put somebody on the spot because if somebody doesn't want to give it to you, then how do they say that to you in a way that doesn't feel like, oh, I just don't want to give you the recipe? I mean, I think you should just give the recipe. Just give it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just give it. Because like also most people say that they're never going to make this thing. This is just a thing that people say, oh, this casserole is so good. Give me the recipe.
Yeah.
But some people are also very territorial, which is like, oh, that was my casserole that then you brought to this potluck. And everybody should know that that's actually my recipe. So people do get bent out of shape on this.
I wonder, yeah. And I guess my wife's a really great cook, but she doesn't use recipes at all. She just makes stuff. And so that's one way around it, right? Like there isn't one.
Yes. I mean, there are certain things though, you totally use recipe. Like if you made eclairs, I think you probably had a recipe for this.
Right, right, yeah. Is there anything on the food front that you've really struggled to come up with a recommendation on?
I think one thing that's hard is salt and pepper shakers. Should the salt or the pepper go in the shaker with more holes?
Oh, man. Wow. Right? I thought that was universal. Is that not universal?
No, definitely not universal. No.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, right? And everybody has a lot of different ways to come up with the answer, which is like, oh, well, I use more salt than pepper. So therefore, some people are like, oh, well, salt crystals are a different size than pepper flakes. Mm-hmm. So that matters. Some people are like, oh, historically salt was more expensive. And so that should be the answer. Yeah.
I kind of thought that because because salt is more powerful, that it should be the one that has fewer holes.
Okay. But then some people would say that something that's over peppered tastes worse than something that's over salted.
Interesting.
Wow. I don't know if I agree with that, but
yeah,
people feel this way.
Is it, I feel like from listening to the show, you enjoy doing it, but is it like, we all know about this idea of like decision fatigue, right? Like we're faced with like dilemmas all day long. Do you get exhausted by dealing with other people's dilemmas, or does it energize you?
Oh no. The idea that I am allowed and invited to give my opinion, like, I would love to give my opinion unsolicited, but this is all solicited. So I really hit the jackpot with this. I think maybe it was Oprah. I'm going to paraphrase Oprah. She once said that you should figure out what you love doing all day long and figure out how to like do that for a living.
Yeah.
And I could absolutely give my opinion all day long. And so, yeah, I mean, and also with etiquette, there is no shortage. We will never come to like the end of this where it's like, oh, well, we solved everything.
It
is unlimited.
Is there anything that you can think of that you've given advice on that you've later thought that maybe you gave them the wrong advice?
I don't know if I have any etiquette regrets, but on the show, I did early on invite listeners, if I ever sort of had a grammar or pronunciation mistake, I invited people to maybe let me know. Mm. I regret that.
Yeah.
Because, I invite anybody to record themselves for an hour straight and listen back, and you tell me if you've ever made a grammar mistake or a pronunciation mistake. So it's sort of like, have a little grace, everybody.
Yeah.
And also, I kind of have a California accent and cadence. So, I might not actually be mispronouncing things. This is just how I talk. So I don't know. So yeah, I think if I had one regret, it was inviting people to let me know when I make mistakes. And it's sort of like, nah, actually, I would rather not know.
Yeah. Yeah. That is great. Okay. So let's talk about podcasts real quick, because obviously you host a podcast. I've been hosting a podcast for more than 10 years. I was early to this, and I would give myself in the early days a lot of advice now, but I feel like podcasts have changed so much. You know, we've gone through waves of formats and the way people show up to podcasts and all that. Like, do you think about that as a podcast host, podcast etiquette? Do you have anything that you think about in that regard?
I mean, we haven't been at it as long as you have. So we've only been at this, I guess we're coming up on 5 years.
That's pretty good. That's a long time.
Yeah. It is impressive when you figure that we're an independent show. I personally edit every episode. We don't have end credits because there is nobody, our show doesn't have end credits, like, cause that's it. It's just Lee and myself. I think for us, cause we're just an independent show and we just kind of are chugging along. We are sort of immune from any of the industry effects or any of these changes. And I think just because our audience is so sort of loyal and our show is sort of very consistent in terms of what we offer. I haven't noticed too much on my end. But like, what kind of changes have you noticed in terms of etiquette?
Well, I guess the main thing I think about is how much everything changed with COVID. And I feel like before COVID, it was like you come into an interview or you join a podcast, there's considerations of lighting and mics and sound and like, keeping people out of the room. And then once COVID started, it was like all bets were off. It was just like people were talking into their laptops and kind of like, kids coming and going all the time, because I think life just changed so dramatically that it wasn't like we weren't allowed to have these like very curated experiences. And I think some of that has changed, especially as podcasts are much more like conversational. We've gone back to that, like there was a time when it was like audio production and quality were super important. And now it's kind of like people talking are what people are tuning into. So I feel like people are now kind of showing up more casually to these, where like a few years ago it was totally different. But I think it matches the time we're in. It's not necessarily like a good or bad thing,
Yeah. I mean, I think we might have given up on this idea of perfection a little bit, which I think is a good thing, because it's sort of like, good is good enough a lot of times. And in etiquette, that is also an etiquette response a lot of times, often like this comes up in weddings and wanting to send thank you notes after a wedding. And a lot of newlyweds are like, oh, I want to make sure that my thank you note is perfect. I want to make sure I get the professional photos back from the photographer. I want to make sure these notes are perfect. And in waiting for this perfection, now 4 months have gone by. Right. And it's sort of like, oh, how do you just write, written like, oh, perfectly lovely handwritten notes the week after your wedding that maybe weren't perfect, but were like lovely and heartfelt and sent them, that would have been so much better than the quote unquote perfect note that you sent 4 months late.
Yeah.
And so I think people forget, like, oh, actually, you know, good is actually pretty good.
You know, okay, let me ask you a question about just because I have you here. Thank you notes, because I have kids and we try to get them like with, you know,
yes,
birthday present.
Answer. Whatever you're about to ask, yes. Yes is the answer to this.
Thank you notes are still, are thank you notes still a thing?
Well, is gratitude still a thing?
I hope so.
Right, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's the question. Is gratitude a thing? And is that a thing that you want your kids to experience and express?
Yeah. Yeah.
And because that's the point of the thank you notes. It's not this homework assignment from the mean world of etiquette. It's that when people do nice things for you, it's nice to acknowledge that. Because I think we all want to live in a world in which we acknowledge nice people doing things for us. And conversely, we don't want to live in a world in which we never acknowledge nice things happening. Because ultimately, that will lead to us just not doing nice things for other people.
Yep.
And so the point of the thank you note, that is one way as a society we have agreed that we express gratitude. But there's lots of ways to express gratitude. And the thank you note can be sort of proportional to the thing that was done. So like if you like had to run out one morning and you know, a neighbor was like, oh, would you grab my newspaper this morning off my porch? And they do that. You can absolutely send them a text to say thank you for that. That is not a handwritten note on engraved stationery. But if somebody sends you, you know, a $500 crystal gravy boat for your wedding, yeah, I'm going to need to put some pen to paper to that. So I think if your kids get a gift from a grandparent, some way to express their gratitude is great. And that could be you filming them saying thank you and sending that video as a text. Like, I'll take that. But the exercise here is that like, oh, we're just expressing gratitude.
Yeah.
So you think the
effort put in has to be somewhat aligned with the amount of effort put in on the other side.
Yeah, etiquette is often about effort. I mean, the idea of reciprocation is a theme that comes up quite often. You know, like when you go to a dinner party, you actually don't really have to bring that bottle of wine. What you do need to do is reciprocate the invitation.
Right.
And so, yes, the level of gratitude, the way you express that gratitude should be proportional. So if somebody buys you a car, a text message is not going to do the trick.
Fair enough. Yeah, I like that. Thank you for that. Before I let you go, I can't really think about etiquette without thinking about Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm, which, you know, has gone on for, they just, you know, the show just ended. And the New York Times piece, I'm sure that you saw, talked about, and you did say that manners and etiquette are different, but this piece, I think by Wesley Morris, said that David was our greatest interpreter of American manners since Emily Post. And I'm just like curious what you think about how that show or it has influenced your thinking about etiquette and manners.
Well, I mean, I think the character Larry of the show definitely has a very strong sense of what the rules should be. And I think that's fine. I think he misses is that etiquette is also about picking your battles and deciding what hill you want to die on. I think, picks all of the battles and decides to die on all of the hills. And so that's great. I mean, that's great TV. But in the real world, like, oh, that's not always like the right way to go. And also, there is a principle in etiquette. Like, we don't want to add rudeness to rudeness. So when like a rude thing happens, it is not our license to then like be rude in return. And often the comedy of the show is like, oh, how can we escalate? Etiquette is about de-escalation. He's wonderful because I mean, he's definitely saying the thing I think a lot of us just our internal monologues are saying. And that is what is so great about that show is like, oh, we all feel this. We all feel this injustice, this etiquette injustice. And so it is great. And it is sad that it's over.
I mean, I think like it, from a food perspective, one of my favorites is like the person in the middle at the dinner party has to be someone who can keep the conversation flowing. And there's an episode of Curb about like bad, you know, bad middling, like you put the wrong person in the middle of the table. That's something that I feel like is a real world piece of advice that people should follow, you know? So I feel like there are real things that are usable.
Yeah, although the etiquette, you know, rule, if you're going to get real fancy, is you talk to the person on your right for the first course, and then the next course, then you talk to the person on your left. So there actually are some established rules at a, you know, very formal royal family kind of dinner that you might actually do for this. But yes, the conversation ball, you know, how to actually be a delightful dinner party guest, Yeah, this is a skill. Not everybody's born with this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate you joining, and everyone should check out Were You Raised by Wolves. It's a really fun show. So thanks for coming on, Nick. Before I let you go, I have to ask you, what was your last best bite?
This pistachio gelato that I had. I gotta say, that's my go-to gelato flavor now.
Awesome. At a like place in New York or at a...
This little gelateria in my neighborhood that just opened. And that's always like one of my go-to, like, oh, how good is your gelato tests? Mm-hmm. And that it really nailed it. So, you know, it's summer when gelato is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're the third guest in a row who has said ice cream. So I think that that reinforces, that's where we are in the year. So, well, thank you, Nick. And thanks for doing the show. And thanks for coming on.
Thank you. This was a treat.
It was really fun. And everyone listening, we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.